welcome to Road Talk, Navigating Your Journey, where it is our mission to empower Christians with boldness and courage in every place. This is Jacob Hawk, the host of this podcast. You may be sitting in your car in traffic, walking in your neighborhood, exercising at the gym, or just trying to relax after a long day, but we are thrilled that you have joined us to spend time in God's Word. For more content, writings, podcasts, and other materials, I invite you to visit drjacobhawk.com. May God bless you richly and have a great day. Well, I want to welcome you back to Road Talk, Navigating Your Journey. We are going to continue our series on leadership today. I have Marcus McKee in my office with me today. Marcus, how are we doing?
We are doing great. How about yourself?
Doing well. Marcus and I are about to leave to go to Red River, New Mexico for the Red River Family Encampment.
Yeah, my first time, so I'm excited.
My wife's first time as well. Suzanne's going to be there, so we look forward to being with many Christians together in the beautiful mountains of Red River, New Mexico.
The cooler mountains. Yes, much cooler than Dallas.
But we are going to continue our series today on leadership. This is episode 131. Last episode, we started this series by talking about, just generally speaking, what is leadership. Today, we're going to get a little bit more targeted in our focus and discuss specifically why leadership is important. Some things we've both seen through the years working for churches or businesses or organizations. So, Marcus, first question for today, when have you seen leaders, quote-unquote, turn the tide of a group or an organization?
You know, there's been several times that I've seen it turn the tide, and I've seen it turn both ways. I've seen a leader come in that's done excellent and turn people around, and I've seen leaders come in and just, from the moment they hit, they just are all wrong and approach things wrong, and just it sinks the ship, so to speak. I think of a time where, when I was at Stryker, we had a great guy come in, and we had not had a leader over our group for several months. Matter of fact, it'd probably been about 6 months, and so they finally hired a guy. He came from another part of the company, and Pete came in. And he knew what it took to be successful and doing what we needed to do. He understood the business, and he understood people. Mm-hmm. And so when you took that, he took his knowledge of the business, but then his love for people, his understanding of people, and just took us from where we didn't know what we were doing. We were in the mediocre numbers to the next thing you knew, we were at the top of the chart, and we were the top producing group within our division. And it was all because of one person who knew how to come in and motivate people, because he genuinely thought about people first and was that kind of guy, that kind of leader.
So that's interesting. You said two things about Pete, which I'm assuming is the same Pete we talked about in the last episode.
Yeah, it's going to be the same guys. And I've got another couple of guys. I'll have to bring another one out. But for now, we'll talk about Pete. No, they weren't named Pete. Okay. They had a guy named Jim, and a guy named Nick, and a guy named Brady, and I can go on, Frank. And
we don't have Pete 1, 2, and 3.
No, we don't. We just have Pete.
Okay, well, what you said about Pete 1.0 just a second ago is you said he knew the business, but he also knew people. So let me just ask you, Marcus, is it possible to be a leader in an environment where you may not understand the business as long as you do understand people?
I think it's absolutely the case, because I think when it comes to leadership, if you understand people, then you're able to understand that you need to put the right people in the right places. You're able to admit where you're not strong, and you find people who are strong in those aspects. I think it does help to know the business somewhat, but I think this is why you see certain leaders will go from one industry to the next, other industry, because they were a great CEO at X company, and they go to Y company, and they're still a great CEO because they understand people. They come in and they go, you know, I'm not strong at this, I'm not strong at that, but I know this person is, and they get to know people, and that's where you see the shuffling. Sometimes those leaders will bring in leaders that have worked for them for many years, and a lot of times you see that because they know that person can get things done. And so, yeah, I absolutely do.
Right. You know, first thing I thought about was, I know we both like John Maxwell. We've both read pretty much everything John Maxwell has ever written. You know, one of the reasons I like John Maxwell so much is because when he was in his late 20s, he was a minister. And, you know, 40 years, 50 years later, he is considered by many to be kind of the worldwide leadership expert. And things he has written has been, they've been used in corporations, businesses, schools, churches, nonprofits. Well, there's no way that John Maxwell understands every sector where his writing is used, but his ability to understand people and specifically how to motivate people and build leaders transfers across all industries. And I thought about, I've been in ministry now, I guess I'm starting my 17th year in ministry.
You're getting old, brother.
I'm getting old. And I guess in the time period, I've had close to 60 different elders that I've served with at four different churches. And not all of those elders had the same secular profession. I've had elders who were attorneys, who have been doctors, who have been CEOs, who have been school teachers, who have been school administrators, coaches, just people just in general types of business like insurance or marketing. And they didn't all lead people the same way, and some probably led people better than others. So it really doesn't matter what industry you're in. The ability to lead people and understand people transfers, I think, to every sector.
I would definitely agree. I think of people that a good friend of ours that he's well known. Matter of fact, he listens to the podcast, but we were just talking about him earlier, and he's in a sector where he has furniture stores, and he is a great leader. No doubt in my mind, if he was to go open up another type of business, he would be just as successful and be such a, because he is that type of person. Mm-hmm. You know, he has the people skills, but he knows people. You see him, and you see him in an environment where he's known people. People know him, and they know who he is, and they love him. And so that translates, right? It absolutely translates. And that person, I think, makes somebody like that makes a great elder in the church, because there's someone who gets people.
I want to follow that person.
Yes. I want to follow him. I'm going to follow him through no matter where he leads me, because I'm not because I'm going to blindly follow him, but I know he's going to get me through the other side, or she's going to get me through that other side. I've had some great leaders who were that way. I had a lady named Julie, and she was one of my bosses, and she knew how to motivate, and she knew me was better than anything else. And so her style with different people on the team was different. And so she was really good, and you'd follow her anywhere because she could put the team together.
One of the great old quotes of leadership says, and you can probably finish it when I begin it, but it says, if you're the smartest person in the room, you're in the wrong room. And so I think, you know, the best leaders surround themselves with people who understand maybe the day-to-day operation better than they do, because they may not know the industry or the environment as well, but because they surround themselves with smart people, they can make the right decisions. That's the whole idea between a president having a cabinet, you know, a university president being kind of overseen by a board of trustees. You want people who are smarter than you are helping you figure out problems. That's one great sign of leadership. So, you know, you alluded to this as we started. People can turn the tide for good. They can turn the tide for evil. As evil of a man as he was, no one can deny, you know, Adolf Hitler, pretty good leader. You know, Putin, pretty good leader. Taking leadership principles for evil and using them in ways that harm people. So how do people, Marcus, how do they develop the ability to influence people?
That's a great question, and I think that's why so many people struggle with leadership, is because they don't realize they need to develop skills to deal with people. They try to develop skills to be the best in a certain field, and that's a technical expert, right? Mm-hmm. That's, you have technical experts, and you need, every successful business is going to have a technical expert in every area of their business, and they're going to have a really good technical expert, but that doesn't mean that that person's a leader. The leaders are those who are able to develop the people skills, the people understanding. They're able to, and they go about that, what I've seen is through practice and study. Now, there's some folks that have a natural, I think, have a natural ability that can excel because they have certain traits that are better than others, and that lead to some great results. Somebody maybe has a better able to vision the future. They can see maybe 10 steps ahead, and they can lead, they can get people bought into that, right? And you see somebody like Adolf Hitler. Adolf Hitler was a master manipulator, right? Mm-hmm. And somebody like Hitler and somebody like Stalin and some of these guys, and you keep going, you go on back, you have these master manipulators because they understood people. They understood how people are focused. Now, the trick for a good leader and for the great leaders is that they care about people not because they're trying to get something out of them, but they care about people because that's who they are. They just care about them, and they go, I want you to be better than what you think you can be. I want you to do more than you think you can do. And those are the guys, I think, that are really successful because they're not using their people skills to achieve an end goal. They're just using their people skills because they're good at it, and that's what they want to do.
Mm-hmm. I love your terminology. The leaders are experts in people, not technical experts in the business. So let me give you another question that's not really in my list of questions today, but we're dancing all around the issue. So how do we become experts in people? And you just mentioned one thing. You don't try to pull things out of them just to develop a product or to meet a quota. You care for them as individuals. That's one way you become an expert in people. How else would someone become an expert in people?
I think you have to start with yourself. You have to understand yourself, and you have to understand what you're good at, what you're not good at. And then you have to decide, do I want to be an expert in people? Because there's people that don't want to be around others, and they're probably not going to be the best leaders, and that's okay, right? And it's not everybody has to be a leader. But to be an expert in people, you have to want to be around people, and then you have to find a mentor and study. And who better than Jesus? When you think about a people person, there was nobody ever better, because what did Jesus? He knew everything. Everything's about a relationship, and it's about people interacting and being able to connect with somebody. And when you think about it, have you ever had anything great happen in your life, or anything bad happen that you didn't really share with others? Yeah. It's all part of who you are. And to develop people skills, to be that people person, I think you have to, one, start with yourself. Then two, you have to look to mentors and to others. And that comes through reading. That comes through spending time with others. And just, again, determining to love others.
Yeah. Yeah. You mentioned studying people. The thing that I thought about was the best leaders I know are excellent listeners. We often say God gave you two ears and one mouth, use it proportionately. If you really want to understand people, you got to listen to what they're saying so that you understand why they are the way that they are, what makes them tick. And someone, when I'm in a room with someone and I know they're never going to reach the level of leadership that they want, it's because they don't shut their mouth. I mean, they never hush. They're the one that's always talking. They're making the most noise rather than just observing and watching. And most of the time, if you're a good listener to what other people are telling you because you're wanting to understand them, you're also going to be better at receiving constructive criticism. Like, if you can't learn to stop talking in a room and let others speak, there's a very good chance you're not going to be very good at receiving instruction on how you can improve. Those two things go hand in hand. And so leaders only speak when they need to speak up. They spend a lot more time listening. So we become experts in people. We care for people. We listen. We study. We have a good mentor. What would you say, Marcus, causes aspiring leaders, you know, young men, young women who want to be in a leadership position, what keeps them from succeeding? What makes them fail?
They focus on themselves and not others. I really think that's a lot of it. It's a desire to be good because you want to be known and you want to be seen as a leader versus let me focus on making the others around me better. You see this in managers at every level. You have a leader at every level, and the managers will stay where they are because they make sure the tasks are done. The leaders at every level are helping the other people around them become better. And when you do that, they make themselves not needed because they've helped the others do that. And people aren't successful as leaders because they forget that. And they may climb the ranks for a little while they're stepping on others, so to speak, you know, and instead of lifting others up, they're trying to get others to lift them up. You know, that's something I've been guilty of throughout my time. I wish, you know, being 54, I wish I could go back and do things a lot different than I had in the past, but I was young and foolish, and I had too much thought about myself and not enough about others. And I think that's probably the biggest thing that I've seen is people are self-centered.
Yeah. We've been around churches, both of us, our entire lives. And that means we've gone through several elder selection processes. I've gone through several working for a church. And I don't know about you, Marcus, but I've always found that it's the men, when you ask them, would you be interested in being an elder, the men who say, oh, I don't see myself doing that. Like, I don't think that I'm ready for that type of position. Not all the time, but I would say most of the time, those are the men who are the most qualified.
I would absolutely agree. They're the Moses in the group, right? What, I can't do this. Somebody else is more qualified. I can't do this. And then they turn out to be the best leader Israel ever had. Mm-hmm. And then the same thing for the churches, because they fight against it because it's not out of fighting against it to a false humility. It's because they truly believe it's such a monumental job.
Yeah, they recognize the monstrosity of the task. Yeah. Versus someone, when you say, would you consider being an elder? I'd love to. Like someone jumps the gun that quickly.
I'd love to. I've got it, man. I know what we need. I need to get in there because we need to turn this around, yeah. Right? You've heard that before. They want to get into an eldership because they don't like what's going on in church, and they're going to get in there and turn that eldership around and get them going the right way. That's never a recipe for anything good to happen.
That does seem a little problematic. Let me ask you this question. It just kind of came to me while we were talking. We're talking about what makes leaders fail. I'm going to ask that question in a different way. Is it possible for someone to be a really dynamic leader without having gone through a pretty traumatic episode of some kind in their life?
I think somebody would have the capacity without having gone through that, but they're not going to be able to lead completely. Because show me a leader who's never failed, and you're not going to have a leader in a lot of ways, because they are going to learn from those failures. Traumatic things make them better. They learn from those. Somebody could have the capacity to be a great leader. Maybe they haven't had a traumatic thing, but I don't think that necessarily makes them a bad leader or makes them fail. Let's think, if you think back in the military, when you have the fresh lieutenants right out of the academy and they're there, they have potential. They're not the leader they can be right then, but fortunately they got that master chief or that gunnery sergeant who's been there for 30 years helping them get that experience. So it's, I would say it's possible for them to be a good leader, maybe not a complete leader.
I like that. That's a good designation. Thinking about kind of the elder selection thing or just leadership in general within the church, we see words like Paul writes to Timothy about elders of we want men who are above reproach. And obviously that's inspired advice, so it's excellent advice. But above reproach does not mean clean rap sheet.
Exactly.
Above reproach to me means they have weathered some storms and have probably made some mistakes and have seen some hard times and probably done some not so great things because we're all human, yet they have remained faithful to the Lord and have, if they've done things they should not have done, repented from that and have lived a more improved life. That's above reproach. And I think, you know, we see this from Paul in the story of the thorn in the flesh. We minister the best out of brokenness. It took Paul having the thorn in his flesh and him begging three times for it to be removed for him to finally understand my grace is sufficient for you.
Yeah, it's the tough times tell us about ourselves and help us help others. I mean, it's if you think in 2 Corinthians, he starts the letter talking about we're blessed when we have these things because we can minister to others as they're going through things. You know, when I didn't know how to minister to somebody who had stage 4 cancer until I went through it and had it. And you know, given less than 20% chance to live for 5 years, and that sets you on a whole different path in a way that you can relate. And so I can relate to somebody who has that diagnosis better than somebody who can't, because when you're part of that C club that nobody wanted to be a part of, we learn things that help us be better for others. And not just leaders, but that's every aspect of life. I mean, I think it's so important to have elders who have failed, understand where they failed, are willing to admit that and move on from that, because then they can help somebody else struggle through that. Because if we have to have somebody that's always got to act perfect, how can they help somebody recover and move forward in a way that's respectable if all we see is somebody who's supposedly above reproach, meaning they're above reproach, they're being perfect.
Mm-hmm. You're right. And you think about Paul's writings, we're studying Galatians in our Bible class on Sunday mornings right now. The end of Galatians chapter 1 is all about who Paul was as Saul.
Mm-hmm.
And you read the book of Philippians, first part of chapter 3, same thing. Here's who I used to be. Here's who I want to be now. He does that when he's writing with you know, Timothy and Titus in the pastoral epistles. He says, I was the chief of all sinners. And by the grace of God, I've received a new life. I am what I am by the grace of God. And he does it certainly all throughout Corinthians, 1st and 2nd Corinthians. He alludes to his past. So one of the reasons Paul, I think, was such a dynamic leader is because he could say, I didn't always used to be this way. So when I talk about change and transformation, I'm talking from personal experience.
Right. We want to listen to people who know what they're talking about, right? Somebody who's been there, done that. And that's the ones that you listen to, because they can help you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, Marcus, thank you again for your time today.
Well, I appreciate being with you. I love it. Love to, not that I have a whole lot of good stuff to say, but I can at least pontificate for our listeners for a few minutes there.
I think you do have some wonderful things to say. Marcus and I will be in the mountains the end of this week and the beginning of next week. But hopefully when you listen to this, you're having a great day. We look forward to catching up with you when we return. As always, keep your eyes on heaven, and we can't wait to talk with you next time. God bless.